Welcome to the Bros Who Think podcast. My name is Lyndon Burton, a.k.a. Youngboy Terry McGinnis, a.k.a. Hoodie Season Lynn, a.k.a. We Are The Beard Gang, and
yes,
a.k.a.
Sir.
We Are The People's Champ. We are the People's Champ, ladies and gentlemen. This is episode 17, and I'm here with my co-host, Cameron Johnese, a.k.a. Cam Jam. Cam, how are you doing, my brother?
Oh, we got a good one today.
Yo, we've been holding off on talking about this, but like...
I'm doing great, though.
We can finally talk about it.
We can, man.
So, we have today an interview with Jason Whitlock. We did this interview, I believe, on Tuesday of last week. By the time people hear this, it would be last Tuesday. We did that interview about 8 in the morning. We sat down, and me and Alex Voorhees, we conducted the interview. Thank you to Alex for helping us out. Thank you to Alex Ripito for helping us out.
Yeah, appreciate
all
the help, guys.
They're also part of the crew family. But we did that interview, and I conducted it. Cam wasn't able to speak on it while the interview was happening, but he's going to give his thoughts later in the episode after the interview. But, yeah, man, we sat down with Jason Whitlock. Cam, what are your initial thoughts?
It was a week ago, and we're about to re-listen to it and then give a little commentary on it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a very, very good interview and very good conversation, to say the least.
I did. I did, too. Thanks,
y'all, man. Y'all, you did I have to say you did a pretty damn good job.
I just wanted to sure we didn't lose our integrity.
No, and we didn't. We didn't. You pressed him when he needed to be pressed, but you did it in a very respectful way. He seemed to respect you and the interview.
It was
itself.
A very good, insightful conversation, because now me sitting on it now, this is the only thing I'll say before it plays, and then we do our thoughts. Now that we sit on it now, my respect for him has changed.
Absolutely. Even before this started, I was like, just with the correspondence and just how like timely he was with everything.
And not even that. Like, he's a professional.
Yeah.
But 100%. I'm talking about just like my respect for him on a level of like, I can't say intelligence. I want to say just the level of his thoughts and his social commentary. My respect for him has changed.
Yeah.
At first, I thought he was just an Uncle Tom and a coon, like how everybody says. There are things that he says that I don't agree with, but there's things that he says that are 100% I do agree with.
Yeah, and we know where he's coming from now.
Yeah, like I think to understand somebody, this is what this has taught me and what it should teach our listeners. For you to truly understand somebody, you have to sit down and talk with them, and then you build that common ground. Everything that we talk about, to get change, you have to sit down with somebody that you disagree with and talk to them, and then maybe a bridge can be formed and y'all meet somewhere in the middle. And honestly, Cam, I think a bridge has been formed, and I meet him in the middle.
Because at the root of it, you guys both want to go from point A to point B, but you just want to get there in a different way.
Yeah, so, and
you guys realize that you basically in a particular set of circumstances want the same thing.
Essentially, everybody just wants this world to be better.
Right.
It's just the ways we get there. And without further ado, I don't have anything to say until after the commentary.
Yeah.
Do you?
No, I'm ready to listen to it.
Well, without further ado, Bros Who Think fans, we give you, drum roll please, we give you our interview with Jason Whitlock. We hope you guys enjoy. Sit tight, because after the interview is over, me and Cameron will give you our commentary. Thank you guys for listening, and we hope you enjoy. Hello, Bros Who Think podcast fans. My name is Lyndon Burton, and I'm here today with a special guest. We're very delighted to have him here today. We've talked about him a couple of times on our podcast before. We're here with the infamous and famous Jason Whitlock. Jason, thank you for coming on the Bros Who Think podcast today. It's an incredible honor to have you, and we appreciate you coming on today.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Thank you, sir. Just to start off with a couple of questions about your background, could you fill us in on how you got into sports journalism and what made you decide to do this path? Because you were a football player, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yeah, I went to Ball State University on a football scholarship. As a kid, I was someone that always read the newspaper because I was a big Indiana Pacer fan. And, you know, back in the olden days, the only way to follow your team was in the newspaper. But, you know, when I went to Ball State, I originally didn't really know what I wanted to major in. I originally signed up to be an accounting major. And first semester of college, I got my first math class for accounting. And decided that wasn't the right fit for me. And a friend suggested that, hey, man, you read the newspapers all the time. You're into sports. You should be a sports writer. And so I changed my major to sports writing my freshman year after the first semester, and just grew up wanting to be or in college decided I wanted to be like Mike Royko, but I wanted to be Mike Royko was a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, probably the, you know, one of the most popular syndicated columnists across the country for about 20 years out of Chicago. He wasn't a sports guy, but I decided I wanted to be the Mike Royko of sports. And so that's what got me in the sports writing lane.
That's awesome. I definitely can relate to the accounting thing because I took an accounting class and decided that that wasn't the path for me at all either. So I can definitely relate to you on that point of view. I want to talk to you about your article. For those who don't know, you wrote an article called I Can't Breathe in America. Is that correct? Or it's...
No, Why black folks can't breathe.
Yeah, why black folks can't breathe. Yes, sir. And I read that article and it was very interesting to me. One of the points it was basically talking about the prison complex and why African-Americans are stuck in this rut of just constantly we're going to prison. We're getting targeted. And the fact that our dads are getting taken away and sent into prison is the reason why black males grow up without a father and the reason why they get stuck in this trap and everything of that nature. And one of the things you mentioned in that article was about holistic journalism and about how if we rely back on holistic journalism like we did during the civil rights era, we could progress further because the news isn't getting reported that way. And one of the questions I asked you on Twitter was, why don't you use your platform to discuss these things? And my question is, if you are a proponent of holistic journalism, why aren't you the one in the forefront for speaking about the right way to protest in the right way we should discuss these topics for black Americans?
Well, you know, you've asked a question that's a mouthful, Lyndon, but
my apologies.
I would say that my involvement at ESPN with the Undefeated.
And congratulations on that. That's a huge accomplishment. The Undefeated is a great website.
Yeah. And so my involvement with trying to launch the Undefeated was me trying to live out that vision.
Okay.
You know, I think there are people that don't want that vision lived out and worked to unseat me at the Undefeated and create an environment where it was hard for me to run the Undefeated. And, you know, I think that, you know, when I got fired, removed from running the Undefeated, that transitioned me away from, you know, I've been a journalist since 1990. And so in 2015, after 25 years of being a journalist, I decided to go in a television direction, which is less journalistically sound, but it was really the only option for me at that point, given where my life was at, where my career was at, the type of money that it takes to support all the responsibilities that I've taken on in my family. And so, you know, not a lot of places are financing journalism.
That is very true.
It's a lot of places are financing, you know, entertainment,
clickbait,
things like that. And, you know, we don't like the term because Donald Trump uses it, but it's accurate. They're financing a lot of fake news. And so, you know, the kind of journalism that I wanted to do at the Undefeated and at ESPN, I think at the end of the day, ESPN decided they're not interested in that. And that's not what they want to do. And so for me, you know, I transitioned into a television role. I write occasional columns for the Wall Street Journal. But, you know, the business around journalism has changed so drastically that, you know, to do what I want to do or what I was attempting to do is just much, much harder. And there's a lot of resistance to it. You know, journalism has been reduced to Twitter.
I hear you talk about that all the time.
That's not journalism. And so I try to explain to people that, you know, Twitter really is smallpox in blankets for Black people. It's we think Twitter is our salvation, and it's really our destruction, and it's our demise. And, you know, we as Black people, we have a very unhealthy addiction to Twitter. And it has Twitter prevents you from seeing the big picture. It prevents you from participating, in my view, in the chess game. It's a game of checkers over Twitter. And as long as we're playing checkers, we're just going to get slaughtered in the real game of chess that is life.
I definitely agree. Social media has its ups and its downs. I would like to say, though, without Twitter, me and you wouldn't have been able to connect and you wouldn't be on this podcast right now. So I think there's certain benefits to certain social media aspects. I think when you use it in a negative connotation.
Let me ask you this. You know, people connected before Twitter.
Definitely.
You know, my email address is not a secret. So I don't think Twitter is the only way we connected. It may have been the easiest way, but there were other ways for you to reach out to me beyond Twitter. So I think Twitter's given way too much credit.
I just think there's certain things in this world that everything has a positive and a negative, and I think it's the way you use it. And I think, yes, Twitter, there's a lot of harm because of the way that people portray themselves on the internet, and that's a lot of harm to kids looking up to those people and thinking that's which the way life should be when it's not. But there's certain aspects of it allowing us to connect with people across the globe. And I think that if we channel that aspect of it, it could be used the right way. But I definitely agree with you. Certain aspects of the internet is used in a harmful manner for bullying and for other things of that nature. But my fans of the podcast would be upset with me if I didn't discuss with you the LeBron James fiasco about the N-word getting painted across his house when you said that racism doesn't affect the rich. Could you go into that? Because to me, that's what didn't sit well with me with one of your shows, because I think racism I think if you're African-American, racism can affect you no matter what financial level you have. I think it just affects you different ways.
So, Lennon, I want to answer that question, but I want to go back and just finish my point on Twitter, and I will address the LeBron James thing.
Oh, yes, sir.
The reason why I analogize it to smallpox in blankets, a blanket can keep you warm, but if it, and I don't know if you understand the smallpox in blankets.
I get what you're saying.
No, but again, this is what was done to Native Americans. They were sent, hey, here's these blankets to keep you warm during the winter, and they were poisoned with smallpox, the blankets were, and so it killed them. And so, yes, Twitter can be used for good, but it has been poisoned, and no one is more sick with the poison of Twitter than Black people. We're the only people that have something called Black Twitter. If it were so good, if Twitter were so good and such a positive force, trust me, there would be a white Twitter, a Latino Twitter.
Well, I will say Twitter. This, there is right-wing Twitter, there is left-wing Twitter. It depends on how deep you want to dive into your subculture. I think Black Twitter just is at the forefront because of how the popularity it receives. But there's, trust me, I have like done research on Tommy Lauren and how she was brought up and how she populated so fast or so quickly that I've seen right-wing Twitter at its finest. Or alt-right Twitter.
And so, again, if you're talking about alt-right Twitter would be something you would consider a negative, correct?
It depends on in which connotation. I feel that those people live in this country, so that a dialogue must be had. Just because you have views against people, certain people in certain ways, I don't think that their views should be left out of the equation. I feel that everybody should come to the table to discuss so we can move forward and progress.
So,
to give you a politically correct answer.
I don't really like engaging in politically correct conversations.
I don't like alt-right Twitter, to answer your question.
Right. And so again, if you look at the groups that from alt-right Twitter to black Twitter to it's a dumbing down and an avoidance of the real issues in America. And it's the most divisive form of communication that I think we've ever had here in America. People are performing, putting on fronts. It's a very dishonest conversation, and people are jumping to extremes, whether it be alt-right Twitter or Black Lives Matters Twitter or whatever. People are jumping to these very extreme views of each other. Again, just, you know, I don't want to bog the thing down, but trust me when I say this, as someone that, you know, has been in the field of journalism for close to 30 years, who's achieved at the highest levels of journalism for a long time, there's been no more destructive force on journalism than Twitter. And then so as it relates to LeBron James and having a racist word scrolled on his gate, my point in that, I'm a person that was raised in the church, raised in the black church, who understands that the wealthy, regardless of skin color, exist in a different world than the non-wealthy and the ordinary person. And that's why the Bible says it's easier to squeeze a camel through the eye of a needle than for a wealthy person to see the kingdom of God. And so I'm very, and keep in mind, to probably the overwhelming majority of people that are listening to this podcast, I am considered wealthy. I make a substantial amount of money a year and a half for a long time. Certainly not in LeBron James's category of wealth.
But you're doing pretty well for yourself, if I must say so myself.
But for a lot of people, I'm wealthy. And so I understand the difficulties of remaining true when provided a great sum of wealth. And so, listen, my point on LeBron James is that letters scrawled on his Brentwood $20 million mansion that he did not personally see. He and his family were in another city. What was the real impact on LeBron?
I think it goes to the fact of his kids. I think his kids were the one who, whether you say a $20 million home, that doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is he has young kids, young African-American kids in this culture, and they're going to see it. They're going to see it no matter what. And they're going to ask their father, what is that? What does that mean? And he's going to have to explain to them about racism. And I think all young kids could see, an African-American, a young kid could see, well, if LeBron could get the N-word spray painted across his house, well, what does that mean? It could happen to me. So I think the fact that he brought light to it, I do agree with you to the point of Emmett Till. He shouldn't have said that. But I think the fact of him bringing light to it should have definitely happened, because every young kid in America needs to see that LeBron James is getting treated this way. And if he can get treated this way, I can get treated this way. And we must find a way to stop that. I think money is irrelevant.
I understand your perspective, but my perspective is this had no impact on LeBron James, his family that was not there. Again, most black people, regardless of age, at some point, most people are going to be called a name, regardless of color. A child, LeBron James's kids at school probably go to some private school with some white kids. And there's going to be some name calling going both directions. And so I think LeBron's kids, if their childhood's anything like mine or perhaps yours or whatever, they've already had that conversation about someone calling them some name, whether it be the N-word or something else. I don't think LeBron James' household came to a stop because they're in Cleveland and something happened in their mansion in Brentwood. And so I don't, the lesson that you think or that others think is so valuable that, it's important. LeBron had to talk to us. I just don't think it's that valuable. And if we look at the history of black people and look at the what the people that sacrificed for us so that we could enjoy these freedoms, what they endured. Again, Martin Luther King and that generation that endured far more than name calling. The civil rights movement wasn't about name calling. It was about changing laws so that we could vote, so that we could go to school wherever we wanted, so that we could live wherever we could afford or wanted to. it was about real things. It wasn't about hurt feelings.
I agree that the message has gotten lost in a sense of we're not trying to change the laws. We're trying to just get clickbait and we're trying to be focused on a higher screen. I get all that.
Feelings movement. We're having and I just don't believe in a civil feelings movement that, oh, someone hurt my feelings. Therefore, let's throw a gigantic tantrum and make the world come to a stop. You're not going to control people's feelings. You're not going to remove from the world. And again, that doesn't mean that LeBron James should overlook it. But to sit at a press conference and analogize it to Emmett Till, highly, highly irresponsible and stupid, to be quite honest with you. Emmett Till lost his life. This man had something scrawled on his gate that his servants removed long before LeBron James ever saw it or anybody in his family ever saw it. It was removed before the police saw it.
I definitely think that comparing it to Emmett Till was where he had his mistake, but I think the fact of the matter is we can't say how that man interpreted that word, because that word, I agree with you, yes, that when we're young, you understand that you're going to get called that word. But I think the fact that he brought light to it, and I think that you should use it as an educational moment to show people who think this world isn't racist, all the people in this world who say that it's not like that, to show them that, wait, it really is like that.
There are not. I think you have a very young person's naive view of the world. If you think white people are in denial that name calling and racist name calling go on in America. There's no one in denial of that.
I think the conversation that people have today in the way that we allow certain things to be said, some of the things that we allow to be said and to be heard, I think that it shows that there is some sort of denial because they don't view it, or maybe they don't care. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe certain people don't care what is said, whether that be from the president or whether that be from others. Maybe it's that they don't care, and maybe that's a whole separate issue entirely. But I think
it's not a separate issue. It's it's reality. You're right. There are people that do not care about name calling. And
but I think saying the N-word is just simple name calling, I think that's unfair to the millions of African Americans who have died for us to get these rights in this country, because to them, being called that word is something totally different. And to me, and my grandmother raised me to feel that way, that word is something totally different. So to African Americans, even to this day, just hearing that word should mean something, that it should spark a fire.
And listen, if that's accurate, why aren't we concerned about our own use of that word?
I agree. I mean, that is also a very highly brought up question in the Black community. Why do we still use that word?
It's not that we use it. It's pervasive. It's, you know, you could put together an argument. It's our favorite word. And so, and again, no one, and I don't know who scrawled whatever was on LeBron's gate. There was virtually no police investigation because, one, it was removed before the police got there. But we don't know the color of the people that did this.
We are assuming. And
yeah, well, we're making it. And I'm anti-assumptions because assumptions don't work for Black people. It's a very negative thing for. So my logic is just very consistent on all of this. And I'm just this thing about we've reduced. We can't even focus on the real issues because, again, Michelle Alexander in her book, she spelled out Jim Crow and mass incarceration, the real issue. I wrote the piece, Why Black Folks Can't Breathe. I wrote for Playboy back in 2007, 2008 about mass incarceration. But we all want to have a conversation about name calling. And name calling is not our problem. And again, so there are people like me that's like, hold on. I want to use journalism to focus people on real shit because there is real shit out here impacting Black people. But everybody, because it's popular over Twitter, because it'll get clicked on, we want to have conversations about bullshit.
Okay, that has my question to you is then, because the popular way is to spout the bullshit, why don't you use the platform to discuss the prison complex and the new Jim Crow? I understand you said about the undefeated, they didn't allow you to do that, but you're at a new platform now. So why don't you be the front runner in that conversation? Because,
Linda, because when I was running the undefeated, that was a platform built to do that. I'm now on a sports television show where I'm supposed to talk about things really related to sports. And so I just want you to understand, again, I get your point and your assertion that why don't you do? And what I want you to find me, and again, this will sound defensive, but I'm just being factual. Find the sports writer in the history of America of any color who has written more and discussed more about mass incarceration in his sports-related platforms than the guy you're talking to. Now, I'm the person I'm the bad guy who is doing all the wrong things, but you can't find a Black, white, Asian, Latino sports writer who has written about mass incarceration, talked about it on platform, other than me. If you can find, I would love to see it. And so I'm doing the best that I can in the lane that I'm in. Now, if I make a career change where I go completely into the politics of blah, blah, maybe I'll do more. But it's like you're holding this sports writer to a standard no other sports writer can touch.
Jason.
Have anything written on, and I'm talking about before Michelle Alexander's book, I was writing about it in Playboy in long pieces, in long form, reported out. So I get.
I understand. I understand your point, and I definitely applaud you and commend you for what you have done and what you are doing for the community. Because I will say, before this interview and before preparing for this interview, my interpretation of you is different. But that doesn't mean that certain points that you have that I don't disagree with. But we can agree to disagree because that's what makes America great. But I will say this. From what I can tell, you're talking in the past, and I'm talking about the TV show now. I understand you're, and also you're a sports guy, to where that shouldn't be the conversation at hand. But when we discuss things such as Kaepernick, because that's been on your show very much. So instead of focusing on the anthem, and instead of focusing on the smoke and mirrors, why not bring up the mass incarceration, the police killings, and tell that side of the story? Instead of belittling the man and doing the skit that was on Speak for Yourself.
There was no skit on Speak for Yourself, so let's just deal in facts. There was no skit. There was a picture on Twitter.
Were you not allowed to air the skit?
The skit was never complete. Okay. My apologies. Yeah, we can deal with Kaepernick. He's not Jesus.
Oh no, in no form of the fashion.
Okay, and so let's just be consistent here. If U.S. presidents can be spoofed, if Martin Luther King can be spoofed in comedy, if everybody damn near on the planet can be spoofed, except for Colin Kaepernick, he can't be spoofed.
I don't think that's what we're saying. I think it.
Well, he's a public figure who's taken a position that I disagree with. I disagree with his approach. I don't think it's based in police brutality or trying to do any of that. This was a guy who's going through an identity crisis. All young people to some degree experience identity crisis. This guy, because of his unique background, and I'm not taking a dump on his background, I'm just talking factually. African-American father, white mother, both of them, father never had nothing to do with. Mother gives him up for adoption, raised by a white family in the suburbs. Those are some real issues that will create some identity issues. All young people go through identity issues. His are more acute. Colin Kaepernick, if you just followed his career, which I did as a journalist, there was no bigger Kaepernick supporter than me. Thought he was the next John Elway, all caped up for him, knew exactly who he was about. The dude was about fun, strip clubs, strippers, tattoos, his abs. And I'm not speculating because I know. I'm not speculating about what this dude was into. And I was great quarterback, blah, blah, blah. He loses his job, and the next thing you know, he's Malcolm X. I don't buy it.
So do his actions outside of football and everything he's done to help communities and what he's done in Africa, does that not gain any merit with, or does that not hold any weight?
It gains a small bit of merit with me, but to me, they're all PR moves after the fact. If he were into this before and just now made it public, I would be on board with it. But what he did was he took a knee or sat down and put himself in the middle of the news cycle and made himself this controversial figure.
But I don't think that was his intention. I think the fact that you see him asking Nate Boyer, what should he do and to be the most respectful and to be the most subtle way to do this protest that he felt was impactful to his heart. He reached out to military people and other people of that nature. So that shows the forethought of him thinking about this long before he did it. And that shows that he actually cares about what he's doing because it actually means something to him. The fact that he did research on this, does that not gain any merit either?
I'm not sure what you mean by research. I think in reaction to the controversy, Colin Kaepernick has made a series of decisions, including meeting with Nate Boyer, including the charitable donations. I'm going to give $1 million and now we're going to document. He's done a series of things trying to walk back the controversy and trying to put himself in a better light. He's done a series of PR moves, in my opinion. I'm open to people disagreeing with me. People can believe in the authenticity of what he's done, but I've seen this before. I've seen people get in the middle of a PR crisis, and then all of a sudden, because again, you could argue, hey, Whitlock's in a PR crisis, and you know, Black Twitter hates him. And so, what I could do in a PR move is start spelling out publicly all the things that I do and have done.
If I'm not, I will say this: if it's a PR move, why does he not have a job in the NFL? He knew he was going to lose his job, so this must mean something more to him than that. He
doesn't have a job because it's not under his control whether he has a job or not. There's 32 NFL owners, head coaches, assistant. They decide whether he has a job.
But do you think he's talented? Okay, let's break it down then. Do you think he's talented enough to have a job?
Absolutely.
Well, then let's go a little further. Do you think the reason why he doesn't have a job is because he took a knee?
Absolutely.
Well, then if he knew, do you think he knew he wasn't going to have a job if he took that knee?
Hell no, he didn't know.
I see. That's where I don't know. I think he might have known he was going to fall on that sword because
Lyndon, and you have a right to your opinion. I'm
just posing other train of thoughts to you.
I get it. And everybody has a right to believe what they want. But no, what Kaepernick thought when he opted out of the contract, when he thought, I'm going to get on the field, because he opted out of the contract so they would play him last year. And he thought, and he thinks, that he played so well last year that was going to trump the controversy and there would still be demand for him as a quarterback. He was wrong. He calculated wrong. And there are people like me, and everybody thinks I hate Kaepernick. I really don't. I want to give the dude good advice because he's getting horrendous advice from the media, from his girlfriend, and from the people using him as a political pawn. Horrendous advice. I could have told him last September, hey, bro, you take this knee, unless you put up 35 TDs and 8 interceptions and win about 8 games, you're going to have a really fucking hard time getting a job again. And this is the flaw if he had the proper people around him. Hey, Cap, you want to do some pro-black stuff? Cap, you want to make an impact in black communities? Cap, take care of business on the football field. Let's get this next contract and take the money that you're comfortable with from football and invest and support people and move and things that you believe are in your best interest. These football players out here trying to be leaders of a social justice movement are out over their skis. And if we in the media were holding them accountable and giving them good advice, we would be telling them, hey, man, do what wealthy white people do when they have money and they want to influence politics and things like that. They financially support people who can focus on that 24/7, 365. Don't you try to take it on as a part-time job. You're a wealthy person with a big career going on. Use your money to support people, a Dr. Boyce Watkins, Umar Johnson, whomever you believe in, Jesse D. Jackson, Louis Frank, whomever. Take that money, support them, let them focus on that full time rather than you trying to do it as your part-time job. It's flawed thinking. It's ineffective. it preaches to a little small choir over Twitter, but that little small choir isn't going to amount to shit. And I'm sorry that people dislike me because I'm trying to advise us on how to effectively promote change and make a real impact. I'm the bad guy because I'm saying this is idiocy. Football players try, while their career is going on. Jim Brown has already laid a blueprint for this. He's already said, look, if you want to be an activist, quit football and be an activist. You can't do both. Jim Brown retired at 28, 29 years old and then went into being a social activist. If you don't study your history, if you don't understand your history, you're going to make mistake after mistake after mistake. And so, you know, I'm sorry that my opinions don't make all the millennials captured over Twitter comfortable, but rest assured, my advice is based in logic, reason, fact, and it's about how do you play the chess game rather than the checkers game that we're playing.
The idea of the protest and the idea of what was initially said got lost. And I think that we're just going to have to agree to disagree at this point.
So, Landon, let me ask you this. What would you say to a person who would have told you in August of 2016, if you take a knee during the national anthem, your cause is going to get lost? Because any grown person, any person with any hair on their chest could see, if you take a knee during that, no one's going to hear what you're protesting about. It's going to get lost in a bullshit discussion about the national anthem. Anybody with a brain could see that. And so it's great that you have a different perspective. But there are those of us that have lived long enough that was like, hey, man, there's better steps to take if you really want to promote that message. I think the execution and
the way he did it was flawed. I think the sentiments and the heart behind it was there. I think the execution was flawed wrong. I think if he was truly about what he was saying, he would have conducted speeches about it, constantly explaining. Every time that somebody would discuss, oh, this is the anthem, the flag protest, he should shoot it down. But he's been silent to this point. And I think at that point, that's on him. And maybe it goes back to the fact that he doesn't know if he wants to play football or be an activist full time. But I think he doesn't speak enough on his what his protest is and what it plans to do forward.
And so, again, those are points that I've made and continue to make. But I'm the bad guy because we're supposed to just defend Kaepernick, and by defending Kaepernick,
it's not necessarily defending it. It's not what you say; it's how you say it. It's the way you come across. I think that gets lost in translation because this conversation we're having right now is very enlightening, and some of the perspective I had on you have changed, and that's what's great about conversation. But I think it's the way you say it and come across that leaves the sour taste in people's mouths. And I think people don't do their research enough on you to understand that this is what he actually stands for. I may be wrong in that assumption, but who knows?
I don't think. I don't think you're inaccurate. But what I would say is, it's Twitter. And again, maybe the flaw, I should not participate in Twitter. Maybe that's a solution. But what I think is that Twitter, if you remove Twitter, because Twitter has become more pervasive and more popular over the last 3 to 4 years, particularly with Black people and how we view the world. Those of us in the media, most Black people aren't even on Twitter. But I guarantee you this, if we remove Twitter, your view of me would be completely different.
Even though that what you say is that, I think the view of you comes from what you say on television. I don't think it necessarily comes from your Twitter posts in the Twitter clips. I think it comes from watching your show, because my upsetness, I came from me just watching television and just messaging you on Twitter, trying to ask you a question. So I think it comes from the platform, not necessarily. I think Twitter's the way to address that problems.
Lennon, I think there's probably some truth on what you're saying, but I think that those of us like you that are dabbling in the media or trying to get into the media, again, if what I said wasn't interpreted by Twitter, I think you would be hearing me differently, because the things I'm saying to you right now, I've said all these things on TV during this show. You may not be hearing them because, again, we've created this thing with Kaepernick that where you stand on Kaepernick defines your level of pro-blackness. And if you're not in full support of Kaepernick's idiocy, you're not pro-black. I think what Kaepernick has done is harmful for black people, has taken us away from the real issues. I sit here and go look at this black woman, Michelle Alexander, that wrote a book that's the blueprint that tells everybody exactly what's going on. And we ignore it and get involved in this Kaepernick bullshit and get involved in this, because I've tried to explain to people this unarmed shooting of black men and why this whole narrative is bullshit and why it has no real impact other than stirring up emotions over Twitter. Because, again, I just want you to, and this may take time. You may not. Nah, I'm not going to ascribe your feelings or whatever. Just understand this about the killing of an unarmed black man. The government is anti that tremendously because there are lawsuits and multi-million dollar settlements with the family. Lawsuits, and go look it up, from the payouts to Eric Garner, Tamir Rice family. There are and again, we live in a capitalistic society. And so the government is already strongly anti-police brutality because it's a money loser for them. What the government is for is mass incarceration because it's a money-making proposition. You can make money filling up private prisons and jail cells, and you can build those prisons in rural white communities and provide jobs for the people in those communities guarding black and brown men incarcerated.
What you're saying is wrong. I think it's the way you say certain things and certain things that just affect certain people differently, that's what they don't like, because the message of the new Jim Crow and the police in the police systems of the government and the systematic oppressions, that's there with what you're saying. I think it's the other stuff of the berating and the degradation of these people that are trying to are trying to take a stand. And I understand that, yes, they may be going about it wrong, but at least they're trying to do something about it in turn. And it's the bashing constantly of them.
Let me give you another hypothetical. I have a weight problem, Linda. And so if you saw me it's like Jason Whitlock has announced he's addressing his weight problem and he's going to the gym every day. But you also saw that he's going to McDonald's every day. Somebody would every day could go on TV and say, Whitlock, if you eat McDonald's, it don't matter how fucking hard you exercise, you ain't gonna lose no fucking weight. And so, again, that's all Kaepernick's approach does not work. Focusing on police brutality does not work. The government is already highly motivated to stop police brutality. What is not motivated about is stopping mass incarceration.
It hasn't stopped, and it's not just black men, it's white men as well. I'm just saying it's continuing at an alarming rate among all races.
No, Lyndon, you're wrong. In a country that is as heavily armed as America, we are the most armed country on the planet, as far as I know. As long as that's the case, there are going to be police shootings. And again, if you look at it statistically, if you just go by the data, it just doesn't happen that often, statistically. Now, that's just a fact. Now, I don't care. And again, this is where I blame Twitter for creating the thought and the narrative that police are just out here randomly shooting and killing black men or just people. It's not factually supported. What is factually supported is mass incarceration. And so again, either we can deal with the facts or we can deal with the Twitter narrative. And again, you're talking to someone who has lost a family member that I helped raise.
I think that's to very police important. Misconduct. Again, like I said on Twitter, I apologize brutality. For your loss because I was insensitive and I didn't know that had occurred in your life when I said what I said on Twitter. So again, I'd like to apologize over the interview to you so you could hear that. So
again, when I'm sitting here, I know how my cousin got in position to where he could be killed by the police. And it's America's drug war and mass incarceration. They put some felonies on him. And once they put the felonies on you, or any, they can do whatever they want. And they can always justify it. And so, again, mass incarceration is the issue. Now, again, police brutality will get you clicks. It'll make you popular. It'll make you a martyr like Colin Kaepernick is. But it's not our issue. And I don't care what Twitter tells you, because Twitter is there to mislead you. It's there to distract you and focus you on the wrong shit.
To the families of Eric Gardner and the people.
What would you say to my family?
I understand you come from, you have that background.
I don't have to go speculate about what do you tell Eric Garner's family. I don't have to spend 1 minute like speculating about it. And I'm not telling these people, I'm not saying that, oh, forget them, blah, blah, blah. The government isn't, because again, the government settles and millions of dollars. The government is trying its best to stop the police. What the government wants the police to do is politely escort these guys to prison where they can turn a buck on them. The government doesn't want them killed. That costs money. I don't know how many. So again, it's like we're begging the government to do something they're already doing. They don't want them killed in the streets. And I'm just telling you, cost them money. Politely put handcuffs on them, walk them to prison. Now we can make money. Now we're in business. Do we understand the society we live in? This is capitalism at work.
No, I definitely agree with you that the systematic oppression and the jail construct and everything of that nature. I think that's the true beast. But I don't think that means that we turn a blind eye to what's been going on.
I say turn a blind eye. Hey, you know what? What we turn a blind eye to, and this is just factual, is the killing we do to each other.
I take a stand to that as well. In a podcast episode I had recently, I talked to a person who lived in that lifestyle, and we discussed what do you think is the best form of fashion to to stop that as well. And I and don't get it twisted. Just because that's a problem doesn't mean that the other one isn't a problem. I think we have multiple problems that we need to handle. It's just which one do we tackle first. But I don't think just because we say that the police killing is a problem that we automatically people, the response is, well, what about blacks killing blacks? Yes, that's a problem, but what we originally said is a problem as well.
Lyndon, it's to what degree of a problem? You know, it's like, it's to, Lyndon, I don't know. Where did you grow up? What kind of environment?
I grew up around all types of people. My parents were not, they weren't bad off. They were pretty well off, but they kept me around African Americans. I went to school, a private school, so I saw both sides of the field.
So again, Lyndon, I'm not trying to diminish or belittle your.
Oh no, I understand.
But I'm just going to tell you that I keep coming back to this. My father a lot. I talk about him on TV a lot. He built a business in the hood. He built a brand new home in the hood because he only wanted to be around black people. That's what he liked. That's what he enjoyed. His bar, the Massapequa, my favorite place on earth. Again, he lived in an entirely black environment. He carried a .38 pistol every day that he was alive on this planet. And it wasn't to protect him from the police. He put bars on his alarm system on his house, bars on his business, alarm system. It wasn't to keep the police out. And so I get there are people that have media platforms who really didn't come from these inner city communities that they love talking about. And so their speculation is from their positions of privilege is that, oh my God, black people are running around in these black neighborhoods worried about the police. It's not true. It's not factual. It sounds good over Twitter, sounds good on a podcast, but it's not reality. And so again, I'm not your upbringing. What it doesn't diminish in any way your black. You're as black as my father or anybody else. But again, I think a lot of this speculation. And again, if you understand how the system works, who gets elevated to these media platforms and spots? A lot, the overwhelming majority of the people that get elevated to these spots didn't grow up in predominantly black environments, have been disconnected from predominantly black environments. And then they get on TV and start speculating about what's really going on in predominantly black environments. And they don't know what they're talking about, and or they're just saying shit that they think will sound good over Twitter.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts and your ideas on this, on these two subjects and these questions. I had to talk to you about that because that was something that we talked about on my podcast a couple episodes ago. But I would be an imbecile and an idiot if I didn't talk to you about sports for a little bit, if you don't mind. I'm a huge Saints fan. I'm a huge Pelicans fan. Are you excited for the NBA? Today is tip-off day. Who's your choice to win the NBA Finals? Who you think is going to make some splashes? Just give me what your upcoming thoughts on the NBA Finals are. Or not the NBA Finals, the NBA season.
Well, I think, you know, the Warriors are going to win it.
Definitely.
That's an easy pick. But I do think what's going on in Cleveland is going to be the most interesting thing to follow. How
I agree.
This team thrown together by LeBron, how will it respond, you know, when will Isaiah Thomas be back? What type of impact Derrick Rose what type of impact Derrick Rose is gonna have on this team is gonna be fascinating. Like, I grew up a Pacer fan, still a Pacer fan.
Did Paul George, did that hurt you? Are you ready for a new start?
No, it's disappointing, but, you know, I'm ready for a new start. I don't, the NBA to me has problems. I don't like the super teams. I'm like Michael Jordan.
But how can you say that when the 90s had, I think every era has had their own form of super teams.
Well,
you look at the Kobe Shaq, the Michael Jordan and Scottie.
I'm a Magic Johnson fan, and so I was in support of that super team.
Oh, exactly. The Magic, Kareem, James Worthy.
Oh, yeah.
That's a definite super team, and then across the way with the Celtics. So I think every era has had their version of the super team. I think it's just whether or not you're fans of that team at the time. But I will say this. I think my Pelicans might, if Rondo's healthy, can maybe do some, make some parity happen in the playoffs.
I wouldn't put too much stock in Ron. Case Anthony Davis, I think is a different story. But Lyndon, I'll be honest with you, it's hard for me to transition from the conversation we've been having just into talking sports. Man, I want to express to you how much I appreciate you reaching out and just having an honest conversation, and one that was, you know, uncomfortable from time to time. But, you know, I think as a young person, for you to have the balls to do this and to have this conversation, I think your future is bright. And, you know, I plan to, we can do this again or anytime you want to.
Thank you. I definitely appreciate it. And that's just something that I've always preached, that if you want true change, you must sit down with the person that you don't agree with and have an open and honest conversation, because that's how real change comes. You don't have real change unless you do that.
And so the other thing I would just say is, you know, again, we don't have to agree on everything.
Not at all.
And I don't mind being pushed and prodded and questioned. I should be. But again, what I really should be. And again, the same, I'm trying to, you got to be the change you want to see. And so
definitely,
this is, Kaepernick needs to go through the same process. He needs to be questioned by his critics, and he needs to engage with his critics. And if he wants to legitimize what he says he stands for, you can't be mute homicide.
I agree.
Ali. You have.
Well, I don't agree with that name. I'm not gonna lie with you. I don't agree with you with the name of him, but I definitely agree that he needs to say something.
All right, just tell me this then. why have we identified Colin Kaepernick as this? No one can, there can be no jokes cracked on Colin Kaepernick. Why?
No, I mean, there can be jokes cracked on him. It's just, I guess it's a sign of the times, man. I guess you're right when you say the political, we're PC and we don't accept jokes, but it just feels wrong. It just doesn't sound right. I don't know. It's just feeling you get when you hear it.
No, Twitter made you believe that Colin Kaepernick exists in some special place where he can't be ridiculed, criticized, spoofed, whatever.
Well, I don't know about that, because I definitely have had my own personal ridicule of Colin Kaepernick from wearing Fidel Castro t-shirt, and that's why Miami didn't sign him. I don't agree with that. I think he wasn't in the positions to know how Cubans felt, and I think that was very short-sighted of him, and I think that he didn't take in consideration what those Cubans went through. So I definitely have criticized his steps along the way, but I think it's certain things. And again, I go back to, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. It's just certain things come across as that negative connotation.
So, and again, listen, people close to me have said the exact same thing. The criticism you're making of me, that, hey, man, it's the way you say it, and people don't understand where you're coming from. Give me the example in terms of, I disagree with the guy, and I got to be true to myself. I got to deal with Colin Kaepernick with kid gloves. I don't do.
I'm not saying kid gloves. I'm saying say what you. My dad always told me to say what you feel, because if you don't say what you feel, you're going to regret it later on the line, and you're not going to feel that you were true to yourself. Say what you feel, but I don't know, man. I just think it's again, my mom always told me, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. If you can say all your criticisms of him and explain it, but it's the way you say those criticisms. It's not that you have criticisms of him, it's just the way that you go about the process of it. We want those criticisms because that's how you try to make Colin Kaepernick a better human being, and you try to help him along on this process. He needs those criticisms, but there's different ways to go about it. I think if you maybe this is me just reaching. I think if you and Colin Kaepernick had a one-on-one conversation, looking each other in the eye, I think there would be enlightenment on both sides.
Listen, I would love for that to happen, because I would love to walk Colin Kaepernick through the process and how to get back into the NFL and how to affect real change again. It's just like, I don't have real criticism. I didn't like what LeBron did with his gate feel, but in terms of overall what LeBron James does, I'm in total support of. In terms, this dude is taking his money and investing it in Akron and in young people in Akron. And that's why he doesn't feel a need to take a knee during the national anthem, because he's putting in real work consistently.
But do you also think, I have a question, do you think that the stance the NFL takes in the way they allow their players to be free and to speak their minds, because LeBron has always had that freedom, so he's always spoke his mind, but you see the work that's done. These NFL players, they can't speak their mind, and do you think that it's just the way that the NFL handles it?
I completely disagree. The NFL players can speak their mind. And again, the NBA has a strict rule in place about the national anthem, about the way the players come dressed to games, all kinds of shit. The NFL has rules in place to control their players. The NBA does. The NFL got caught with his pants down and should have had a rule in place about the national anthem. And, you know, a lot of these NFL players are already doing work in their communities. Twitter has baited them into, Twitter and Colin Kaepernick has baited them into, the only thing you can really do to support black people, or the blackest thing you can do, is take a knee during the national anthem. And it's stupid. That's not the blackest thing you can do. The blackest thing you can do is what LeBron James has been doing in Akron, putting in real investment in young people from a community he cares about. That's the blackest thing you can do.
That's definitely real work, and we commend LeBron James for doing something that Mike never was able to do, because Mike said Republicans buy shoes, everybody buys shoes, and Mike didn't.
No, that's an
but Mike unfair Mike didn't of, Mike didn't step in.
That's an unfair criticism of Mike. Again, I don't know. This would be 1,000% speculation. I guarantee you Mike Jordan financially supports some very good work in community.
Oh, he probably does. It's the thing that the voice has to be there, because when you see Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player on the planet, and one and a icon to many young African Americans and many children all over the world, not saying and not speaking up about certain issues, I just think some of that is needed in certain situations, because LeBron does it beautifully.
Not all the time. But I hear what you're saying.
But not everybody's perfect, you know?
Right.
Because I definitely think the choice words that he used, Emmett Till, was not the best choice words. But we can't say that LeBron hasn't done his, given 100% all to help black people. But back to that point I made about Colin Kaepernick.
I'm not going to go there either. One, I like what LeBron does, investing in his community. But again, if you understand the chess game that's really going on, LeBron's a global citizen. And again, being a global citizen is great for elites. Most black people are not elites. And so when you understand the global economy and how that works against the overwhelming majority of African Americans, being a global citizen ain't the most pro-black thing you can be. And I say that knowing President Obama was for this global citizen shit, global citizens. That ain't in our best interest. Hey, brother, we can do this. Anytime. I'll text you my phone number when we're done. Awesome.
Thank you for coming on, Mr. Whitlock.
I need to bounce. I got to get on with the rest of my day, but I'll be.
I definitely appreciate it. This was an awesome conversation.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Yep.
So, yes, ladies and gentlemen, that was our Jason Whitlock interview. We want to thank you guys for listening to that. Now let's get into me and Cam's thoughts on it post-interview. I wanted to get mostly Cam's thoughts because he was sitting right next to me when I was doing it, but the way we had it plugged up,
I was actually taking a test right whenever it started, which I did get an A on.
Ooh, my boy, that's what I'm talking about.
But, yeah, I walked in about 20 minutes into the conversation and I was listening, but then we just listened back to it. I wanted to start off and just complimenting you on this. You know, Jason Whitlock is a big name. He's a big deal. You know?
Yeah.
And the way you conducted the interview, I think you handled yourself very respectfully. You didn't let him dance around any of your questions. Whenever you asked him something,
you made
him answer it.
That really means a lot because what people won't see, and we don't even have to talk about it, but they don't see the work that went in behind that interview. It took us about 2 weeks, hard preparation. And again, I want to thank everybody who was involved with helping me prepare for this. I want to thank you, Cam. I want to thank Nick. I want to thank Alex Voorhees, and I want to thank Alex Ripito for staying up with me late as fuck, because the Skype interview is a total different beast that we didn't know how to do. And that's why we couldn't get Cam on the interview, because the mic situation, the way we had it set up, it was just, it wouldn't have worked out the way we set up. But now in the future, we'll be able to get Cam in on these interviews. But let's jump in. I want to say thank you, because I wanted to hold the Bros Who Think podcast with integrity, because this name means something to me. We've put our blood, sweat, and tears into this. And I believe in it, and I didn't want us to kiss his ass, so to say.
And more to what I was saying is, I think he respected it as well, because, I mean, we just heard it towards the end. He said, anytime, hit him up.
Yeah.
I think he liked the conversation that he had, because he even said that he likes to be challenged, and he needs to be challenged, and I think that you actually made him think about some of the points and gave him a good perspective that he may not have fully gotten before.
Again, it's what we always say, it to have real conversation and to conduct real mind-altering change. And when we say change, we don't necessarily mean that laws are going to change. We don't mean that these things are going to change. We mean opinions change and to result into a finding a common ground. Right. And I think, at least on my opinion, because again, we're not going to go too much on what he said. We're just giving our interpretations of the interview, because he's not here to defend himself.
Right.
So I think that true common ground was made in that interview, because if you listen to our old episodes, we were very negative on him.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
And to be honest, one of my thoughts was, I didn't want our fans to think, oh, well, they got a big name, they're just going to kiss his ass and just switch their thoughts on it. That really affected me for many nights. I was staying up late thinking how I was going to handle it. And the best way to handle it, I think, which we did, was just to have an honest conversation and not shy away from the topics. To those out there who wanted us to talk about sports and to talk about him with Colin Cowherd, I'm sorry that we couldn't get to that for this episode. But trust us when we say we'll have Jason on again.
Yeah.
And we will discuss that.
Absolutely. There's a lot more conversation to be had.
Definitely.
Right there.
But I think for the most part, that was what was needed to be discussed.
Yeah, I think this moment in time, the Kaepernick situation and the LeBron James situation were the two most necessary things to be talked about.
Yeah, because we didn't even discuss Ray Lewis, which I wanted to discuss with him, but we didn't get a chance to do that. Cam, what were your thoughts on the conversation as a whole? Do you have any points that you want to, that didn't get said, that you would like to add?
I like he said, he's not here to defend himself, and I wasn't able to make the conversation, but the one thing that, or there was a couple things, but I still can't really wrap my head around his LeBron James.
Me argument. Too.
I understand that the Emmett Till comparison was a bit dramatic.
Yeah, but definitely.
That should no reason take away from his experience, his kid's experience, or just a random kid's experience that looks up to the LeBron James.
Yeah,
and then
definitely.
Wakes up that morning seeing I can literally reach the highest level.
And still get treated.
And still be degraded to the color of my skin. So I think that carries more weight than what he is attributing
to. Definitely.
And that's just me as an outsider looking in, because I can't understand what that word would mean if, like, I'm white, so I don't really understand. But
I respect you. I respect what your opinion is about it.
And definitely hearing the way that you talk about it, it means something a little more to you.
It does. And to me, by him saying money, that's what I
right,
that didn't sit right with me, because I think it goes back to what we talked about when we discussed the story of OJ. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how black you, how rich you get, in a racist eye, you're still a black person. It doesn't matter how much money you have. And to me, what this shows, because he said that people know that people call each other the N-word, and people know that racism still exists. But in the conversation that Republicans have, I've had this conversation, they don't believe that it's there. They do not believe that it's there. And for him to say that that people acknowledge it. Certain people don't acknowledge it.
There's a lot of people that don't acknowledge
it. And for people to see that it happens to LeBron, I think that is one of the most eye-opening things, because it can happen to LeBron, it can happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just brushing it off as hurt feelings and as name-calling, I think that's not fair.
It's like how many times have we heard the phrase, I'm not racist, but blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Like, that's someone refusing to acknowledge the fact that they're about to say something racist.
Exactly.
So I don't know.
That was definitely one of the things that didn't sit well with me, but I will say this. You can tell that he's passionate about it. You can tell that he's not as Uncle Tom as we thought. You can tell that he's a person who wants to fight for the black community.
And fight for human rights. And that's where I appreciated where
you
held his feet to the fire of, why aren't you using your platform that you do have?
Yeah.
Currently. And it kind of disappointed me to hear that, like, he almost kind of gave up on the... On how in his early career, like, he was talking about with Playboy and writing about mass incarceration, and he kind of made it seem like he didn't have that platform to speak on those things anymore because he's on a sports show and he wants to talk about sports.
But I definitely do understand where he's coming from, that they're holding him to because he's hired by somebody, so they said that they don't want him to talk about that.
I get it. I get some of that, but I think that show has touched on political 100%. Stuff, and I feel like that show would be a good outlet.
Yeah,
for
that. Definitely. No, 100%.
But I don't know the situation, and
there's no play. Yeah, like we said, he's not here to defend himself, and we're just giving because Cam wasn't allowed to speak in the interview. We just want to get his thoughts. But, like, I definitely do understand where he says it's a sports show. People are here to look for sports, so I definitely get that. And honestly, it's nice that he came and talked on it, because got to see it inside. We didn't talk about sports at all.
If he wants this to be the outlet where he can talk about some of the more social and political things, absolutely, come on.
And his points on the mass incarceration and the jail time, and then how we're trying to keep black men in jail, and then that's the new Jim Crow. That's real. That is real. And the fact that the fact that he stands on that so heavily. That's a real issue in America. For those who don't know, watch the documentary 13. 13th. Ava DuVernay did an amazing job on explaining how we went from slavery to civil rights to now we're in the new Jim Crow, which is the police incarceration, the police, the jail construct, because most jails are privately owned and it's a bunch of lobbyists. And we're not going to go into that because this is supposed to be short, because you guys spend an hour listening to the interview, and we thank you for that. But if you want to know more about those points we talked on, watch 13 or read the book that he referenced multiple times.
But yeah, so I guess moving on from the LeBron James thing, the Colin Kaepernick thing.
I don't even want to, I want to get your points, but I don't even want to stay too much on Kaepernick.
Right.
The one thing that stood out to me was that he said that police killings aren't a major deal in America. I just want to say that from mappingpoliceviolence.org, which is a very credible website, they spend their time just doing the research on police violence and how many police killings has happened. In this year, well, in 2016 alone, 964 people in the U.S. were killed by police. To me, that's 964 too many.
Yeah, absolutely.
I understand his thing that he says the government doesn't want that to happen, but it still occurs. I think, which I should have said, was the way that they're trained and what the way they conduct it shouldn't be to kill people. It should be to shoot them in the leg, shoot them in the arm, just to disarm them and to stop them, use a taser. It's not, again, it's not like I said, it's not how they, it's how they do it. It's not what they're doing. It's how they do it. It's the way that they're, instead of killing somebody, why not just tase them? You know, there's different ways to neutralize a person than killing them.
The one question I would have asked them would have been, so what should he have done? Because we can all criticize on the way it was carried out and what he was trying to talk about. But I would like to know what would be the proper situation to go about to get as much attention as he did. And I think if you educated yourself on the movement, you understand what his point was.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're not confused about the national anthem argument.
Definitely. In that, like I said, we agree to disagree with certain things that he said. Certain things, I agree with him that the way that it was conducted was wrong. Like, I mean, I think Kaepernick should have did it a different way. I don't think that the kneeling was wrong. I think the what he did after the kneeling. I think the fact that he's quiet. You cannot want change and be quiet. You have to speak on it. You cannot start this movement that takes the whole country by its throat and not say a word. I mean, that's where I disagree with Kaepernick. I think he doesn't talk enough. I think the fact that he didn't vote and publicize that. And me and Jason didn't even talk about that, but that's another criticism I have of him. The fact that you are standing up for black rights and didn't vote. I mean, I know you can say that, oh, well, neither candidate was for me, but there were candidates there that you could have voted for. And I know you may say, well, that vote doesn't matter. But to an African-American, it should matter because multiple millions of people have died to give you that right to vote, and you didn't vote in the most heated election this country may have ever seen? That's fucking bullshit. And I'm sorry. I have always voted, and I'm a political science major, and that is something I firmly believe with everything, every bone in my body. My mom, when I was younger, used to take me to inside the poll with her, and she would teach me how to vote, and she would explain to me that millions of people died so you could have this right. Son, never, never not vote and never abuse that. Because what... If we do that, we're spitting on those people who died, essentially. And that's one thing I don't agree with. I don't agree with the Fidel Castro shirt. I don't agree with that either. But I think the message and the intent is there.
Yeah.
You see what he wants to do.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
And I think another thing I want to say is the fact that he said that him spending money and donating money is a political a PR move. I think that's bullshit.
He said everything was a PR move.
Yeah, I think that's bullshit.
I think that he is going above and beyond to make it larger than a PR move. Definitely. By going to I forgot the exact country that he went to. Gave away suits and
he went to Africa, but I don't know.
Suits to away to the homeless people in New York, but he went to give food away in Africa.
Yeah, he went. I don't know what specific country in Africa he did, like you said, but Kaepernick has done a lot.
But he's done a lot of behind the scenes. He's always at events and stuff.
And the thing is, he's not asking for media coverage for that. Right. So that in itself shows it's not a PR move, because if it was a PR move, every time he would donate something, every time he would spend money, every check he would publicize.
And why would he jeopardize his job for a PR move? That's the opposite of what a PR move would accomplish.
And the fact that he's kneeling and everything, when he said that he didn't know he was going to lose his job, I don't know about that.
You had to have known that you were going to take all the heat.
I think in some form or fashion, he knew heat was coming from him because he's in the NFL. And I think he might have known that, look, I'm liable. He might not have known that this degree,
he
would have known something was going to happen, some consequence was going to happen.
He was going to take the heat for a lot of it.
He fell on the sword for the NFL, but I think that, again, Jason's not here to defend himself, so we're not going to go too heavy in it. I just wanted to get Cam's thought. Cam, any other thoughts you have on this?
Dude, that's episode? It. I just was happy to be an audience member and listen to that. I thought that was a really good conversation.
Thank you, my man. Again, we want to send a huge thank you and amount of gratitude for Jason Whitlock for coming on this show.
Yes.
Like I said, you changed not only my opinion, and I'm not going to say for Cam, but I assume Cam's as well. And I hope that the listeners, when they hear this, they see both sides and they understand that there was common ground found. And if anything is taken from this interview, it should show that when you discuss and you sit down with a person that you disagree with and you talk out everything together, that common ground can be found.
Yeah, and I want to say myself, thank you, Mr. Whitlock, for coming on here and talking to us. You didn't have to do that, obviously, at all.
No, not at all.
Like, and come on. But we want to have you back.
Definitely.
I
definitely
want to be here this time.
You would definitely be here, Cam. We'll definitely have it set up, and we'll definitely get Mr. Whitlock back to actually talk about sports maybe this time.
Absolutely.
But the fact that he gave us an hour and 8 minutes says a lot to me.
I respect the hell out of that.
And I respect a lot what he did, because he didn't have to. We're two kids who have no credibility or whatever. But he gave us the opportunity and the chance to discuss certain things with him and have him on our platform, and I hope we came up to bat and hit it out the park.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're ever in that position, we're going to
do the same thing.
Branch down.
Exactly. And that's the thing. When you listen to this podcast, I want everybody to know that the bros who think will never compromise on integrity, we stand true to what we believe in, but we are respectful to the guests, and we give everybody the opportunity to say what they feel, because if we didn't, that wouldn't be the right thing to do. That's not the way you develop change and you develop a sense of high just integrity. Because to me, I believe real change comes when you sit down and you discuss these things openly. And if we didn't conduct it in a respectful way, then everything we've preached up to this point would be for nothing. So that's 100%. My final thought on it. Again, I want to say thank you to Jason. Thank you to Cam. Thank you to Alex. Thank you to Alex, the other Alex. Thank you to Nick. And thank you to the fans for taking the time to listen to this. This interview means a lot to us, guys, if you can't tell by how we're speaking. We want to thank you guys for being here with us for 18 weeks. We cannot let that go unnoticed. We've been here for 18 weeks. We have special episodes coming up for you for 18. 19 is going to be me and Cam episode where discuss just what's been going on in the week and just where we're at now. And then for episode 20... boy, do we have something special for you guys.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if we should announce it now or wait.
Your call, man.
You know, you think we should announce it? I mean, what about you? You know? We'll wait. But we have some, not only episode 20, but I believe episode 21 is another special one that's special to me, because these two people for 20 and 21, they're really have a place in my heart. So I just want to say thank you to all the fans again. And also the new editorial will be recorded this week. We're deciding between Brent Faiyaz's album and Division's album, but it'll be one of those. It's going to be an R&B breakdown. But for those people who want us to discuss what they want in their editorials and they want fan questions,
hit us up
at broswhothinkpodcast@hotmail.com. broswhothinkpodcast@hotmail.com. The Bros Who Think Podcast is all capitalized, all no spaces. broswhothinkpodcast@hotmail.com. Cam, tell the people, good people, where they can find you at.
Instagram at Captain Camerica and Twitter_CamJam_.
You can find me at Berlin the Don on Instagram, at Berlin the Don on Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook at Bros Who Think Podcast. Go like us, leave a review, give us a comment, tell us what you think. Hit us up on Facebook, hit us up, me or Cam up on Twitter, hit us up on Instagram. And I think that's it for episode 17. I don't have anything else. Oh, the playlist.
Yes.
Cam's playlist is out. Playlist. It is on iTunes and Spotify. It is called It's a Vibe. You type in Bros Who Think, / It's a Vibe, and you'll find the playlist. The links are on our Instagram and Twitters and Facebook. But also, by the time you guys hear this episode, we'll have another playlist out. And that playlist is by London. Our female correspondent, one of our good, good friends. She is officially a part of Bros Who Think staff. We have a staff now.
Yes, we do.
I want to shout out to all our staff members. London, Justin Baptiste, Charles Reese, Adam Schubert, Nick, Cam. I don't think I'm forgetting anybody. I said London, Rip. Charles, Schubert, Adam Schubert. And Justin Baptiste. I'm pretty sure that's everybody. And Alex Ripito.
Yeah.
I already gave you enough love.
I got you, fam.
But to all our staff, be on the lookout. Every staff member's putting out a playlist, and it will not only be rap, We'll have EDM. We'll have country. We'll have rock. We'll have R&B. We're
touching all bases.
All bases, baby. Everybody will have a playlist that's suited for them.
The one that was released last week is my hip-hop playlist, and the one that's going to be released this week by Lil Alchemist is an EDM.
Yeah, so you'll have an EDM playlist. You'll have a hip-hop playlist. And then the week after London's playlist will be our country playlist by Charles Reese. But we're not going to get too ahead of ourselves. But this week, check out Cam's playlist and London's playlist. They'll be on Apple Music and Spotify. But other than that, that's it. That's all I have.
It's a vibe.
It's a vibe, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for checking out episode 17. Again, thank you to Jason Woodlock. We are the Bros Who Think podcast, and we hope you enjoy your Thursday afternoon and the rest of your weekend. And that's it from us, guys. Peace! I know you're tired of waiting. I know a lot of girls hate you. I know they want to replace you. Cause of the way that I raised you. You heard a lot about it talking. A couple dope boys, ball players. A couple niggas straight out the frog game. Say they won't, but they all dream. They hit a lick, hit a lick, hit a lick, hit a lick, hit a lick with you. With you. Surprising themselves when he got you. He didn't even know what to do.